Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Balance, the only sports talk show that gives a well-balanced diet of sports. Host Tom Marquis and the gang are ready to break down this week in sports. This is the one place where fanatics can come together and talk about their favorite teams. The Balance brings you an analytical breakdown of sports from a fan's point of view. So sit back and get ready. It's time for The Balance.
I can't begin to know him, but then I know it's growing strong. Wasn't the spring, and spring became the summer. Who'd have believed you'd come along? Touching hands, reaching out, touching me, touching you.
All right, my minions, welcome to The Balance. It's Saturday morning, and kind of a somber Saturday morning to start the show. I know we normally start it with all kinds of energy, but you know, I thought it was appropriate that we actually dedicate our show today to the entire city of Boston, in the surrounding communities, in the tragedy that happened there. My name is Tom Marquis, El Presidente. So glad that you guys could join us. And I tell you what, Boston is a resilient city, a strong city. I tell you. You think about some blue-collar cities, you think about Boston, of course, you think about Green Bay, but Boston just really came together as a team. And, you know, when situations like this, and we talked about it over on the Hot Corner on Thursday, when situations like this arise, there is no Republican, there is no Democrat. The thing is, when we are attacked, whether it be domestically or internationally, we come together as Americans. Well, the good news is we started the week last Monday on Marathon Monday, and this is a sports story. Obviously, taking place at the Boston Marathon. One of our key guests today will be Megan Beulah of the 500 Festival, going to be talking with us about some of the safety precautions for the mini marathon, as well as the 500 Festival and gearing up for the Indianapolis 500. And Kenny Barr from Radio Speed Talk will be joining us. Well, like I said, the terror is over, and it started out on Monday with two explosions. Hundreds of people injured, three people dead, among them an 8-year-old child. And I don't know if you saw this eerie picture going around social media yesterday. I assume that it's legit. I have no reason to believe that it's not, because it was shared through other very reputable media sources. But and we do want to welcome all of our fans over at Indiana Talks and Live 365 and tune in. We are nationwide. So glad that you guys could join us. But just as the week went along, and then Thursday, right before we went on the air with Hot Corner, they released those photographs and we watched it. You know, I do want to apologize for those of you that follow me on a personal level with the Facebook. I maybe went a little bit overboard, but they caught him yesterday cowering in a boat like the coward that he is. This isn't a political talk show, but I'm going to tell you, I hope the government brings a swift punishment to those involved. We dedicate this entire show to you, Boston. So if you guys – and here's the thing. Michelle Jones, our social media director and producer of the show, her brother actually lives in Cambridge. Shot us some pictures of the scene and talked with him. So look, guys, if you were there – if you have family members that were there, we want to hear from you. 917-889-8516. Guys, we're going to take a break. We're going to get back. We're going to get jumping right in today's show. Megan Bula of the 500 Festival standing by in the wings, and Kenny Barr of Radio Speed Talk. We'll be right back right here on the Balance Radio Network.
Well, I love that dirty water.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the Fan Revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. IndyProSports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
But I love that dirty water.
All right, my minions, welcome back to The Balance. My name is Tom Marquis, El Presidente, and I want to welcome all of our fans nationwide. We've picked up our nationwide feed, and so you can hear us coast to coast right now, right here on Live 365. Tune in, Indiana Talks, and over our various affiliate radio stations across the United States. Well, I'm your fearless host for the next 2 hours, guys, and we're going to be breaking down a lot of racing with Kenny Barr from Radio Speed Talk. Also, it's NFL Draft Week. We're going to be talking about the NFL Draft and, well, of course, the Indianapolis Colts, seeing as how they're right here in our backyard. But we're going to be joined by Ed Kratz of Calkins Media out in Philadelphia, going to be talking about the Philadelphia Eagles and their draft picks as well. But I invited a very special guest on with us today, and also joining us is Mr. Kenny Barr. Kenny, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here. Are you with us?
All right. I'm with us. Kenny Barr of Radio Speed Talk. And also, Megan, I know you've been on the show before, and I apologize if I mess up your name yet again, but Megan Bula, Communications Manager of the 500 Festival here in Indianapolis. Megan, are you with us?
I am with you.
Good morning, Megan. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm better
watching the news last night.
Oh, I can only imagine. And you know, that is certainly something we want to get into a conversation with. We're talking with Megan Bula, Communications Manager for the 500 Festival. And you guys are responsible for putting on one of the biggest mini marathons in the world, if not the biggest mini marathon in the world. You guys have been doing this for a long, long time. But I'm sure that come Monday, on Marathon Monday, as you guys watch the Boston Marathon events unfold, you begin to cringe and call everybody into the war room and to look at your plan. Talk with us about, first of all, I do want to talk about the mini marathon. Obviously, we're going to keep going on. These cowards can't keep us from going on with the 500 Festival. But I'm sure that you guys, Troy Riggs, Mayor Ballard, and various other law enforcement agencies have come together to come up with a plan to keep runners and fans safe. Talk with us a little bit about how you've looked at your plan, your safety plan and your security plan and so forth.
You know, well, we review our plan every year, so it's not something new that because of this, you know, we're addressing security issues, but it definitely has become part of the conversation and has taken up a lot of the conversation in the past week. And funny that you mentioned that, the first two calls that we got to our office were Troy Briggs and Mayor Ballard. So they both were calling to say, what can I do for you guys? You know, let's sit down, let's take a look. Let's make sure that we, you know, keep this event as safe as we possibly can. So we spent a lot of time this week meeting with public safety officials. Some were actually in our building when it happened just because of prior meetings. So we work very closely with them throughout the year to make sure the event is, you know, as safe as possible.
Now, obviously, you guys plan this in great detail, and you have a lot of different levels of runners and a lot of people just different charities. Some are very competitive runners. I don't think anybody has ever been able to beat the Kenyans, but but every year you guys have thousands of people line the streets of Indianapolis, and one of the key aspects of it is they run around the track of the Indianapolis 500. And I know there's probably some things with your security plan that you can't tell us, but will there be a difference, a noticeable difference to fans and runners this year, or is everything that's taken place behind the scenes?
I don't think there will be a noticeable difference, but know that we are working behind the scenes to make sure that everything is secure. I'm sure there will be extra bomb sweeps and a lot of plainclothes officers on site, but to the general public, I don't know if it will look much noticeable. But, you know, as you mentioned, we have 35,000 runners at the mini marathon. We also have a 5K that morning with another 4,000, so nearly 40,000 runners. It is the nation's largest half marathon. And I guess what's most surprising, you know, to me is that we got just this, you know, a handful of phone calls of people who, you know, were wanting to transfer their bib. And I'm not even sure if that had anything to do with Boston, but the overwhelming majority of people just absolutely want to be a part of this event. They don't want this to affect them participating. They're running for Boston, asking how they can show their support. So overwhelmingly, people still want to be a part of this event.
Well, we're joined by Megan Beulah here on The Balance. And also, guys, we picked up our live stream on Indiana Talks as well. So all over the state of Indiana, Megan, we're getting your message out. And joining us also is Mr. Kenny Barr from Radio Speed Talk. Kenny, do you have any questions for Megan from the 500 Festival?
Yeah. Is there any way like three big fat guys can get on roller skates and get in this thing too, or we just gotta would we have to run?
Well, you don't have to run. You have to keep an 18-minute mile pace minimum. So there is a back of the pack bus that will come pick you up if you don't keep up the pace.
Hey, the back of the pack bus, Tom. I think you and I could drive that thing.
I think so. There's a reason I'm on radio and not running the mini marathon. Megan, talk with us about the 500 Festival and the mini marathon. I know we've kind of had a dark shadow over us this week, and I know you've been inundated with questions in media. And honestly, you feel free to tell us anything that you want to tell us about that and how it relates to you, but I really want to focus on the 500 Festival and what's coming up and the events that are coming up. So talk with us about the 500 Festival. And a lot of people might confuse it. You guys are a completely separate entity than the Indianapolis 500. You guys are your own deal, even though you go along the same same work together doing the same thing and promoting the 500. I want to make it clear that you guys are an entity by yourself that put up on events such as the breakfast, the parade, and other events.
We are. You know, and this is what's so interesting and how important racing is to Indiana, that we have a completely separate organization just to plan the community events that lead up to the Indianapolis 500. It is a full-time job. It is, 17 hardworking staff and 7,000 volunteers that put on nearly 50 events that we do throughout the year, most of them in April and May. Our season really kicks off this next weekend, so a week from today. We'll have a free concert on Monument Circle. Gavin DeGraw will be performing, as well as John McLaughlin. Again, that's free. We'll have a beer garden and food trucks and kind of a way to kick off the month of May. And then we have, of course, the mini marathon, as we've been talking about, on May 4th, the nation's largest half marathon. And that has, you know, a two-day expo leading up to it and then a post-race party in Military Park afterwards that will see upwards of 90,000 people in the park celebrating all the accomplishments of these runners. So that's great. You know, you mentioned other events throughout the month. We have Kids Day. It's the state's largest festival for kids. This is May 11th on Monument Circle. Again, completely free. Got a 70-foot Ferris wheel and arts and crafts, and the princesses will be there. It's kind of a fun way to get the kids involved and really cultivate that next generation of race fans. We have the Rookie Run that same day, where kids age 3 to 12 can actually run their own race, similar to their parents might have done the weekend before at the mini. And they get a medal at the end, and they have a runner's bib, so it's kind of a fun way for kids to learn physical fitness. We have a mayor's breakfast out at the track, as well as Community Day, which is kind of an insider's look at the track. That is May 22nd. We have a memorial service that weekend, which is really important for us to really sit back and realize what that weekend is all about. That takes place on noon on May 24th. And then, of course, the parade, as you mentioned, which has all 33 drivers, the Indianapolis 500, along with celebrities, floats, bands, everything you've kind of come to expect in a parade.
Well, I tell you what, that is one of my favorite events of the Indianapolis 500, is going down there and just camping out all morning, watching the balloons get blew up, and just an incredible sight. And, you know, I've got my own secret stakeout spot. I'm not going to let that out because, hey, it's my spot.
You got to keep that secret.
That's right. You know, and us veteran parade goers, you know exactly where to go, know what time to leave, know where to park, know how to coordinate our events so that we get exactly down there in front of the parade. It is a great time. And we do want to talk a little bit more about the mini marathon. 13 days, 22 hours, 15 minutes, and 24 seconds. Now, here on your website, I see that you say it's sold out. So does that mean that nobody can get in? Is it too late to get into the race?
That's correct. We sold out since the beginning of March, and we actually beginning of April, rather, sorry, and we actually had a transfer period. So we had 2 weeks that you could have transferred your bid, but for a medical reason you couldn't run or you missed your chance to get in, but that actually shut down last night. So the field is set. We've sent all the information to medical, you know, getting the bids printed, all of everything's in motion because we're 2 weeks away from race day.
I tell you what, that just gives you chills when you mention that, 2 weeks away from race day. It is an amazing sight, especially when they go around the Indianapolis 500 track as well. So my question also to you, going back to the marathon bombing, I'm sure you guys have looked at your security planning, your security screening, and one of the things that they looked at in looking at the national media that happened there in Boston that maybe they'll review for next year is the ability to have fans and runners bring in backpacks and that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. Will you guys have a security gate to where things will be checked? Is there things that were allowed last year that in lieu of the recent events are no longer allowed at your event?
You know, at this point, we're still talking to public safety officials, and we'll follow their lead and their suggestions, but that has not been suggested to us yet. I mean, it's just a sheer numbers factor. You know, with 90,000 people in the park and everyone kind of having running gear, it's kind of a hard situation to not allow people to bring things in. We do have a gear check truck that we are recommending that people check their backpacks and luggage, things like that, so you don't have to carry it around. But at this point, I just don't know if that would be possible. But, you know, as you know, we are, again, working really closely with safety officials and asking the public to be aware as well. I mean, watching things unfold in Boston, so much of what came out of that was from people just looking around and paying attention to things and using social media and taking photos and piecing all this, you know, the puzzle pieces together. So we're going to be asking for people too, if you see something that looks suspicious, to please find a volunteer or a public safety official, a mini marathon staff member, to let them know so we can check it out.
Now, I'm sure you're also working very closely with all of the city's officials, and we mentioned, Riggs and Mayor Ballard. I also want to make sure that we send our props out to Gary Coons, Chief Division Homeland mm-hmm. Security Director. How closely are you working with him and the federal government to keep your race safe?
You know, we work with various different agencies from IMPD, IFD, Homeland Security. Again, you mentioned Troy Briggs, but they are actually the ones who helped write our plan last year. We sat down with them, kind of basing it off of what happened at the Super Bowl. It was a very successful event. It was a very safe event. So we learned a lot of things from having the Super Bowl in town, and we completely revamped all of our safety plans based on that. So again, we will review them again, but they had a complete rehaul last year because of everything that we learned with the Super Bowl. And that being said, each one of our events is completely different. It takes place at a different location. It's a different kind of event. Some have a 2-mile parade route. Some have a 13.1-mile half marathon route. So they are catered to kind of where we are and what kinds of people will be there, and everything from weather-related emergencies to man-made disasters is covered in this plan.
Now, we talked about the parade. That's a great event. And really, that's probably in a lot of ways as close as a lot of race fans will get. It's the day before the race. Obviously, you'll have a huge number of the Indianapolis 500 fans there downtown around Monument Circle. And then one of the great things about your parade is they really can get up and close to the drivers as they come by and so forth. Are there extra security precautions that you guys have put in place for the parade itself? Because you do have a lot of A-list celebrities, race car drivers, a lot of top-notch people, and you do allow your fans to get close. So what kind of things are you guys working on for safety for parade goers and for your celebrity attendees that will be there?
You know, again, we've always had a safety plan in place. I think right now we're kind of taking it one event at a time. We'll get past the mini marathon and then kind of see, you know, if we can learn anything from that event that we can apply to the parade. Obviously, as more details come out of Boston about, you know, logistics and motive and things like that, you know, the Indianapolis public safety team has been working very closely with those in Boston to see what they can learn from that. So it's all, you know, happening in real time, and we're learning as quickly as we can. But like I said, we always have a safety plan in place to make sure that those event goers for all of our events stay safe and then also have a fun time. It's important not to let this kind of mindset take over your life, take over your experience at these events. So we do want people to feel safe, but we also want them to have fun as well.
Absolutely. We're talking with Megan Buehler, Communications Manager of the 500 Festival, about all the events that are going on. Obviously, a big concert coming up on the 27th. Now, there's another big event, and I don't know if this is actually sponsored by you guys, so if it's not, I do apologize, but do you guys sponsor the Mud Strut as well? Is that part of your...
We do not. That's something that the Indianapolis Motor Speedway puts on, but it's... Again, we work so closely together, a lot of our events kind of start to overlap a little bit, but that's actually something that they do. The mini marathon is the only chance for those people to actually run on the track, and the mud strut's the only time for dogs to run on the track.
Well, I plan on taking my dog out there as well and going to all the various different 500 events. I love being out there, obviously, as part of a media, but as a fan as well. Kitty Barr, any more questions for Megan Buehler of the 500 Festival?
No, that's pretty good. I'm getting quite an education, Megan. You seem to be very well organized and well spoken. It's fun to listen to you.
Oh, thank you very much.
Now, Megan, I know that you have the 500 Festival the month in May T-shirts that are real popular. How can we get one of those?
You can go to 500festivalstore.com. That's something that we actually just did for the first time today. You know, so many people are passionate about the month of May in Indianapolis and attend so many of our events. We thought that it would be a fun way to commemorate the month of May and have your own T-shirt. I want to say also, make sure to check out the Indianapolis Star if you are a subscriber to pick up a copy tomorrow. We have a month of May guide that will be inside the Indianapolis Star tomorrow, and it kind of details all the events that I've talked about, you know, times, prices, locations, tips for the events, fun photos, things like that. So you can check that out and kind of get more details, as well as go on to our website, 500festival.com.
And we'll have all of that up on our social media as well as IndianMay.com, IndyProSports.com, and then TheBalanceOnline.com. One more quick question about the parade. I go down there, and I'm not a ticket holder per se, but those that want to maybe be in the TV section or want to be in the grandstands, they can actually buy a ticket to get that type of front row Macy's Day Parade field view, correct?
Absolutely. We have about 300,000 people that line the parade route. 28,000 of those are ticket holders, so you can buy, you know, reserve your spot in the VIP parade section, in the TV zone, or bleachers along the route as well. Everything else is kind of freestanding, as you kind of mentioned, coming early, grabbing a spot along kind of in between the bleachers and the front, things like that. But you can buy tickets at 500festival.com. I know they are going very quickly, and then I'm sure when we get news of the Grand Marshal, they'll go even quicker.
Well, that was a perfect segue into my last question. And one of the things that I really enjoy is seeing what celebrities you guys are going to be able to bring in town for the parade. And obviously, I'm sure you work with IMS and who they're bringing in for the race to coordinate this. But do you have maybe a cheat sheet of the A-list celebrities that will be in the parade this year?
Not that I could give to you. I'm sorry. We're still working on that. I would expect an announcement in the next, 2 weeks or so of the celebrities that are in town. It really is a last-minute thing for us, kind of to see who's in town, who's willing to come to the race, things like that. So we're still putting that list together, and as soon as we know, we will definitely share it with everyone else.
Well, so some of the normal faces, can we expect to be there? Florence Henderson and some of the normal faces?
I would imagine so. I honestly haven't heard any confirmations yet from a celebrity standpoint, but a lot of those folks come to our parade year after year, so I guess that you could expect them again this year.
Well, there's a campaign out there that says Chuck and Andrew, Grand Marshals. What do you think?
I would love that. That would be amazing. I'll pass that along and see what we can do.
Hey, anything we can do to make that happen, we'll be doing it. If all else fails, if you can't get one, I'm available. I'll step up and do that for you.
I'll throw you that through.
All right. Megan Beulah, I'll let you go here. I know we ran you a little bit long today. I apologize for that. But real quickly, I always like to ask our guests, is there anything that you'd like to tell us that I didn't ask you or anything like that?
No, I just reiterate that our website has a lot of information. I feel like we have so many events going on, and people kind of, get the dates and times and places confused. So, check out 500festival.com or grab an Indy Star tomorrow and grab the month of May guide to make sure that you don't miss any of the action in May.
Now, are you guys also on Twitter, Facebook, all the other social media outlets?
We are. We have a 500 Festival Facebook page. We also have a mini marathon specific Facebook page in case you want running tips and event information about the mini specifically. Our Twitter handle is at 500 Festival, and we use the hashtag mini marathon, no spaces, no dashes. So definitely follow us, be a part of the conversation. We will be very active on event days, talking with people, doing interviews, posting pictures, kind of getting the behind the scenes of the celebrities along the route, things like that.
Megan Beulah, Communications Manager for the 500 Festival, thank you so much for joining us today. I wish that we didn't have some of the overshadowing things that we had to talk about today, but I appreciate your transparency and willingness to talk with us about the things that you can talk to us about.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you, Megan. Megan Beulah, we usually have her on around about this time of the year to talk about the 500 Festival, but unfortunately, we had just a tragic event in Boston, which is a reminder, this show is dedicated to Boston. We'll be right back with Kitty Barr and myself. We're going to be breaking down the racing action of this week, obviously some NASCAR, and yes, there's a NASCAR tie to the Boston tragedy. We'll be right back right here on the Balance Radio Network.
Look at the night, and it don't seem so lonely. We fill it up with only two. And when I hurt, hurting runs off my shoulders. How can I hurt when holding you? One, touching one, reaching out, touching me.
Today's consumer spends 1.4 times as many hours using social networking sites than reading and responding to email. Marquee Solutions works with your company to build a solid social strategy. They are with you from start to finish, always there to help you navigate through the complexities of social media. Call Marquee Solutions today, 317-903-8063. That's 317-903-8063. Marquee Solutions. Work with them today.
My daddy left us. I was only 6 months older than you are now.
I don't remember him. You will remember me.
Jackie Robinson, a black man in white baseball.
I want you to know I'm there for you.
In my heart.
Think about the abuse that he's going to take.
Your enemy will be out in force, but you cannot meet him on his own low ground.
What are you going to do if one of these pictures throws through your head?
I'll duck.
Mark my words and circle this date. Negroes are going to run the white man straight out of baseball.
This ain't the America I know. You hear me?
If they knew you, they would be ashamed.
If Robinson can help us win, then he is going to play on this ball club.
You don't belong here, and you never will.
Get off the field.
Brooklyn Dodgers ain't changing our way of living.
You're wearing me down.
You are not the only one with something at stake here.
You want a player who doesn't have the guts to fight back?
No, I want a player who's got the guts not to fight back.
You give me a uniform. You give me a number on my back. I'll give you the guts.
I father, I Brooklyn Dodger them. I Jack, I rob, I spin. Oh man, I'm Jackie Robinson. Except when I run base, I dodge the pen.
I'm just a ball player.
You a hero.
Why don't you look in the mirror? This is a white man's game.
I'm not going anywhere. I'm right here.
I'm a Brooklyn boy. I may take some getting used to.
Maybe tomorrow we'll all wear 42.
Your talk show for NASCAR.
Yeah! Now that's what I'm talking about.
The Balance Online.
All right, my minions, welcome back to The Balance. My name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente. So glad that you guys can join us on this very special episode of The Balance, dedicated to the city of Boston. Police Department, FBI, the surrounding communities, and everybody that was associated that helped capture these terrorists that brought an attack on the Boston Marathon. We were just joined by Megan Beulah, communications manager of the 500 Festival, talking with us about really the largest mini marathon in the world and how it bumps up against with the Indianapolis 500 and also the greatest racing spectacle in the world. So, guys, I'm telling you what, we're a sitting target out there on 16th Street here in Indianapolis. Joining us now is Mr. Kenny Barr, Radio Speed Talk. Kenny, we haven't had a chance to really talk about this too much other than via text, but obviously not on the air today. I want to get your thoughts and your feelings about what happened in Boston this week.
Well, it's absolutely horrible and tragic, and these guys, I'm glad that they caught this kid alive. I don't know if he's got enough information to glean from him to get to the root cause of this thing or not, but, we talked on text. I think the next step is, get him healthy enough to start waterboarding him. I don't speak for the bleeding heart liberals of this world. I've talked for the common man who want to torture this little shit until he starts talking.
Right.
And once we get as much information out of him as we can, then hang him in a public square. I just can't stand this kind of behavior out of any kind of people. I don't care if they're Chesnev or terrorist or homegrown. It doesn't matter to me. We should have done it to that cook bag in jail for the Sharon Tate murders years ago. Look at the mileage that clown's got. We just don't need that kind of crap in polite society today. We know we have to deal with evil. It's going to be in the world until the end of time. We just have to deal with it on a one-on-one basis, and the quicker the justice comes along, the better. And the better we can deter it and try to get everybody to quit being so hateful and spiteful all the time, the better it is. So let's torture this young man until we find out what we need to find out, and then send bits and pieces back up to him, to his parents in a box.
The thoughts and views expressed on The Balance do not necessarily reflect North's kid. I couldn't agree with you more, my friend. I wish this was a political talk show. We're being aired on Indiana Talks right now, guys. And I tell you what, they have some of the best political talk. So if you want to jump into that political talk, get over there to Indiana Talks. You know what? I do want to give my hats off to them. And I know they got a strong following on that yesterday, and me being one of them. They were actually streaming here on Indiana Talks. They were actually streaming the scanner feed from Boston, and that was pretty cool. There were times where when the Boston Police Department shut it down and then brought it back up, obviously they were moving their locations and things they didn't want to be aired, and understandably so. And really, I could not agree with you more, Kenny, on what happened out there and how this should be resolved. And, you know, now it's in the court system and it'll play out the way it is. You know, there is one hand that says the state of Massachusetts has jurisdiction, but there again, there is a little legal loophole that allows the federal government to prosecute anybody that the state does not prosecute. So the state of Massachusetts, through that loophole, could drop all charges against him and let the federal government pick those up. Then there's also those that will he be treated as an enemy combatant? Well, the thing is, we want, and I know we're getting way off point here, and we'll get back on point here in a minute, but we want the federal government to prosecute this 19-year-old terrorist, domestic grown, if you want to call him domestic, because ironically enough, he became a citizen September 11th of last year. And of course, you know, his older brother, and just he went out the cowardly way. But I can tell you one thing: if the federal government picks it up, he'll be eligible for the death penalty. If Massachusetts picks him up, he will not. So my guess is you'll see this remain in the hands of the federal government. We're dedicating this entire show to the city of Boston and all the community around Boston. Like I said, Michelle Jones, our producer and social media director's brother, actually lives in Cambridge and kind of gave us some eyewitness accounts, if you will, of what was going on there in Cambridge and some pictures. I'll tell you what, we were talking with him this morning just about, you know, what it's like to live under martial law. And it was an eerie sight to see Boston turn into a ghost town. You know, you look at the Red Sox, you look at the Bruins, and you look at a lot of other different things that normally happen there in Boston. And it was a very, very eerie sight. Well, joining us now is Mr. Kenny Barr of Radio Speed Talk. We are going to get back to sports, because here's the thing. No matter what happens, we're Americans, and Americans love sports, and that's what we do here on Saturday. And our show is about sports, and every Saturday morning we talk about racing with Kenny Barr or Cliff Tanner of Radio Speed Talk. And here's the thing. Here's a little storyline that maybe you knew or maybe you didn't know. NASCAR was touched in a very personal matter by this tragedy in Boston. From Hendrick Motorsports official statements, the thoughts and prayers of everyone of Hendrick Motorsports are with Andrew Collier and his family. Andrew, a machinist in the Hendrick County Motorsports Engine Department, tragically lost his brother, Officer Sean Collier, last night in Cambridge, last night in Cambridge, Massachusetts. We ask that the family's privacy be considered during this difficult time. Andrew, 25, joined Hendrick's Motorsports in September of 2008. So they're referring to the police officer that was shot and killed, ambushed in his police car, Sean Collier. His brother was a machinist for Hendrick's Motorsports. Kenny, thoughts?
Well, if I was close enough to the Hendrick's Motorsports team, I'd find this young man and offer my condolences in a private matter rather than the whole public thing that's going to happen there, and offer to pray for him and tell him that things will be okay, but it's really, really tough, and God has a plan for everything, and it all really works out for the best. Tough situation. I've never lost a family member like instantly like that without knowing something's going to happen, so I can't use much empathy. I can't walk in those shoes, but I know that God's strength is better and stronger than anything we got, and I hope he's got a lot of faith, because he can lean on it, and he'll get through it, and the whole family will get through it, and it's just tough. It happens. You just hope it don't happen to you, but if it happens to your friends or family, you step up to the plate, and you be the rock, and you be the person to help them through it.
Right, absolutely. Well, one good thing about it is we have something to smile about now, and that is that we've got a race to talk about this weekend. Obviously, Matt Kenseth takes the pole. You know, Jimmy Johnson leading the pool, the points. Kyle Busch, Greg Biffle, then BK and Carl Edwards. We've got a lot to talk about here in the next 20 minutes or so. We'll try to cram everything in, guys. But like I said, we have dedicated this show to the city of Boston, and so we wanted to make sure we took adequate time to talk about that today, and we'll talk about it a little bit more throughout the show in the next hour. But we had a lot going on in NASCAR. Let's start with BK. You know, we joke around about the BK commercial, have it your way. Well, BK's not having it his way. And NASCAR, in my opinion, Kenny, isn't treating a NASCAR champion with the red carpet.
Well, they're treating them all right, but you're right. It ain't a red carpet. They're keeping a close eye on things, and there's probably a reason they're keeping a close eye on things, and I don't think other teams are ratting them out. I just think NASCAR's got it in their head that they're doing something a little bit fishy compared to everybody else, and so they put them under a little bit tighter microscope. And one of the nice things that I like about Brad Keselowski is he don't have a mute button on his personality. I mean, he's going to tell it like he feels, and that's Dale Earnhardt-esque. And, you know, when he gets a little bit older, he's going to have a following just like Earnhardt and some of these guys that have had, and Richard Petty and some of these guys that have the huge, huge following in NASCAR. Because he's right, if they put a particular team or a particular car under a microscope and don't scope the rest of everybody like that, that's unfair. That's unleveling the playing field a little bit. So I'm not so sure that his communication style is too politically correct. And personally, I don't care. I kind of like it when he calls a spade a spade. So it's a tough week and a half they've gone through. They did get caught doing something outside the spirit of the rules. Everybody does this kind of stuff, Tom. Everybody works the gray areas. Everybody tries to flex the rules. Everybody tries to interpret the rules a little bit different. Heck, we do it at the lowest common denominator. In the 70s, when I had a street stock, one of the first things we did after the first 2 weeks of being dead last is start figuring out how to cheat the rules. You know, so it goes all the way up the chain of command to the top of the hill at NASCAR. These guys are just high profile about it, and they have to do it way better than anybody else, because the only other teams that series that I know that have tougher tech inspections are F1 and IndyCar. So you got to be on your game to make this thing happen, and there's only so much you can do with a stock car, and they're trying to do some things with the rear end and the yaw to get more side aerodynamics to get that right rear to bite better so they feel better going into the corner. And I understand what they did, I understand how they did it, and they just got caught.
Right, absolutely, and you know, I wanted to make sure I threw this in as you were talking about some of the old days, and you were talking with me a little bit about that last Sunday. Had a great time out there with you and Cliff out there at Lucas Oil Raceway covering the CRA the Championship Series, and obviously one of the friends of the show, Josh Timmerman, was out there. Had a rough race there at the very beginning, but you talked with me, and I heard you just various different things. Talk about different situations of how things used to be, how they used to settle the score, out back, and you were talking about some stories about that. So you know, obviously, it's become a little bit more civilized in the big boy races. But I wanted to point out that I had a great time with you out at Lucas Oil, and had a chance to talk with Josh Timmerman. Obviously, had a rough race, great start, great qualification. There for a moment, we thought he was going to be on the pole. That didn't happen. But then he just really was running in the top 10 in that CRA series race. And it just I asked you, I said, what happened? You said, well, he put his foot on the gas and nothing happened. We don't know exactly what has happened. And so I was going to play that interview, but just with everything that's happened here in Boston, we just didn't have time to do it. Any thoughts you want to add to that about Josh or anything else from the race from last week?
Well, I think Josh's game has stepped up just from watching his practice times and his qualifying time. They got that car turning left really, really well down at Lucas and stuff. I never did hear what happened to the thing. It either lost fuel or ignition, because, you know, there's times when – guys like me oversimplify things because we simply don't know. But I know he stood on the loud pedal and nothing responded, and I'm sure Josh had, you know, I don't think Josh swears, but he says, oh, no. And you start looking in the rearview mirror to make sure you don't get run over because they got that 2x2 starting system there, so and nobody tagged him in the rear. But, yeah, something failed on the car, either electrically or fuel. I bet electrically as quickly as that thing quit because fuel usually it'll stumble and bumble and spit and sputter and try to go, and well, his just didn't go anywhere. It just, right there on the spot, and that was all she had, so. I think Josh will be down in Anderson this weekend. At least that's was the last word that Cliff and I got in the McGonigal Engine Performance Late Model Series down there. So hopefully we'll talk to him later today and see what happened last week.
Yeah, you'll have to let me know how that goes. It doesn't look like I'm going to be able to make it up there to that track. And I wanted to feature Anderson Raceway as our track of the week. So we'll just put that up on the social media because I do want to get back to the STP 400 up in Kansas Speedway going on this weekend. And, Clint Boyer pays tribute to the victims of the attacks on Boston Marathon. During practice for NASCAR Sprint Cup Series STP 400 at Kansas City on April 19th. So check that out as well. Now, I want to talk with you a little bit about Dale Earnhardt Jr. You mentioned him a little while ago. 7 races into the 2013 NASCAR Sprint Cup season, and Dale Earnhardt Jr. has earned 3 top 5 finishes and 5 top 10s and ranked 6th in the driver standings. And he trails the leader and his teammate, Jimmy Johnson, by only 35 points. Do we see a new Dale Earnhardt Jr. emerging this year, Kenny?
Well, you don't see a new Dale Earnhardt emerging this year. You see a Dale Earnhardt who's in a car that rides and feels more like the car that he used to be so successful in. Dale hasn't changed a whole heck of a lot. The cars are coming back to him. You know, you've heard the expression that you don't race the racetrack sometimes, you race the Or you don't race the race, you race the racetrack sometimes. Well, in Dale's case here, the car of tomorrow, he never really got comfortable with. It just never suited him. He never got the feel for that thing. It just didn't work the way he was brought up and got in his comfort zone. This car does. This car puts the race back into the driver's hands a little bit, and that is why you're seeing a resurgence of Dale. His communication to his crew chief is better. When the car's loose, it really is loose, and they know how to fix it a little better than the car of tomorrow. So we talked about that. This is a little bit more of an old-school feel car, and just before the season started, we talked about some of the guys we might see resurge back to the limelight. Another name that hasn't come back as strong as I thought he would, but he's with a second or maybe third-tier team is Bobby Labonte, but you see his name on the ticker a lot more now toward the top of the races than you have. I think he's going to surprise some people. Jeff Burton, I thought, was going to surprise some people, but Junior is no real surprise to any of us who know how he drives and how he likes the car to feel.
Well, we're talking with Kenny Barr from Radio Speed Talk. We're talking some NASCAR. Also, you're listening to us live on Indiana Talks, guys. And if you're listening to us and you say, hey, you know, I've got my phone, I'm on the run, but I just love you guys, I just can't get enough of you, go to the app store and download either Live 365 or tune in, search Indiana Talks, and we're right there. And you can just pick us up. You'll not miss a beat. So just go to the app store and do that. We appreciate Gary and everybody over at Indiana Talks and what they're doing to help push us up to a new and better platform with them. Now, Roush Fenway Racing pledges $100 to the One Fund Boston for every lap to led at the Kansas Speedway. The tribute and pledges to help Boston continue to roll in the wake of Monday's tragedy. Roush Fenway Racing is doing its part to contribute, Kenny. This weekend, NASCAR will be at the Kansas. There was some confusion about this last night when you and I were talking, but I think the Nationwide Series is off and the Truck Series is on. But nonetheless, the sprint cars will be there. All cars owned by Roush Fenway will have a B Strong decal on them to show support. Moreover, a more tangible effort will be made as team owner Jack Roush has pledged $100 to the one fund in Boston for every lap led during the Sprint Cup race by Roush Fenway Cars. In addition, representatives from Roush Fenway will be handing out Be Strong stickers to all the fans in attendance. So good to see Roush Fenway getting behind Boston, Kenny.
Yep, it sure is. And I hope the people that they reward with some of this money are actually the first responders, the guys that got 8 hours sleep in the last 4 or 5 days and stuff. They need a great big break and a great big hurrah. I did text something last night to, I don't know, you and a whole bunch of people that I think I heard this great big cheer from everybody east of the Mississippi go up at the same time and a huge sigh of relief. And I truly believe that. I mean, it was great to see how they came together and worked together and got this thing handled. It's a shame that one kid or two kids can absolutely hold a city hostage like that to a certain degree. But we didn't. One of the terrorists don't operate off of death. They operate off of fear. That's their big weapon. And if we turn that potential fear into courage and heroism and things, their big weapon goes away. And the people in Boston, the people in Watertown, the FBI, the Port Authority, and everybody who was involved in there pretty much showed them that we're going to step up to the plate and take care of this, and you're not going to scare us. So that's got to be a little bit of a deterrent, a little bit of a discouragement to whoever masterminded this and come up with the idea to do this heinous crime. So my hats are off to all the first responders and all the people who dedicate their lives to public safety so crazies like you and I can go to 500 festival parades and racetracks and say what we want to say on the radio and not have to worry about our amendment rights being screwed up by some Taliban thinking, that's enough.
I understand. Well, you know, I do want to spend the last few minutes talking about what I call the Dark Wednesday in NASCAR. Wednesday was probably one of the most eventful days in NASCAR goes as far as a sanctioning body ruled down on all the infractions that occurred in the past weekend racing, with Penske especially getting let's just say it, getting their asses handed to them. But I think the one who suffered the most was Michael Waltrip, and then you also look at Martin Truex Jr. and just everybody involved in that mess, Kenny. You're the tech guy. We have you on board for, other than your good looks and your contribution to root beer, we bring you on board for your tech knowledge. What happened? A team like Penske allowing this to happen. I guess that sums up all my questions that I have about Dark Wednesday in one question. What happened?
Well, with the team Penske crew, what happened was they just got caught in that gray area, and it got a little bit too dark. You know, they put some parts on the differential of that car that would make the rear end twist and flex, so the car would go back to that little bit of a dog tracking thing. That's a term a lot of older racers will understand, where the rear end and the front end don't really track truly in the same tracks. If you were driving that car in the snow, you'd see one set of track for the front, and then you would assume that the rear tires would follow perfect unison. Well, it's a dog track, and that rear end's off to the right a little bit, and you'll see not a complete different set of tracks, but you'll see where it suddenly got wider. And when a car does that, then the side of the car is a little bit more exposed to the air, and they were getting side aerodynamic benefit off that. And the way they had it set up, the side aerodynamic benefit would go to the right rear of the car, a little more downforce on the right rear, so when the guys would enter the corner, they could enter the corner a little more aggressively, and you would get that feel like it's going to stick, so you dive in even harder and more comfortable. So it's ingenious how they were doing it and stuff. They're using some flexible bushings and things where the truck arms bolt onto the rear end, and they would move and flex when you backed off the accelerator to dive into the corner. So the engineers on these race teams are a whole lot smarter than people give them credit for. I know that the stereotypical Southern boy image has slowly been going away in NASCAR, but they don't get the same respect as the IndyCar guys and the F1 guys and stuff, and I think they really should. And both the Logano car and the Keselowski car had this on it, had this set up on it. That's why they both got in so much trouble right away. Now, did somebody rat them out? Probably. Is anybody confessed to ratting them out? No way. You know, I would probably sneak over and drop in to my tech guy and say, you know, they're doing something. I don't know if I can figure out how they're doing it or not. And suddenly the light bulb goes off and things are going to get a little bit tighter. So they can rat them out and not really just go over and say, "Them boys is cheating, look right there," you know. But you can subtly do that and then backpedal and say, "I didn't rat you out," and not be lying to anybody. Now, the Michael Waltrip Racing deal, a part broke, and it was no fault of anybody's, in quotation marks. The reason they had to rule it that way is if they didn't, I would guarantee that 10 seconds after they didn't rule if a part breaks and your car gets a distinct advantage, it's okay. It's clean by the rules. Every race team in NASCAR would be designing that particular part to break sometime during the course of the race. And therefore, everybody would have that same, supposedly same advantage. And I truly don't even know what part broke on it. I think it was a suspension part of some sort. But if they don't rule the way they did, engineers immediately are going to start trying to make that part just strong enough to make the first four or five laps and then break, and then the car will set down harder, quicker, and then get through the corner better. So on the Michael Waltrip thing, a lot of people didn't understand it, but NASCAR doesn't have any choice but to rule that way, because if they go the other way, then it opens up the floodgates, and you're going to have to write three or four more new rules. And God only knows that the NASCAR rule book is already getting as thick as the IRS tax code. So it's getting a little ridiculous. So that's kind of what happened with both of those things.
Well, absolutely, and there's a lot. This is probably one of the busiest race weekends as far as different race series and stuff racing this weekend. So I'm curious as to see what kind of adjustments will Penske and just all the teams will be making this week, and how much more closely will Tech be looking for those type of problems. Another question and thoughts that I have, it's early in the season, and these teams and drivers have the ability to rebound as long as they get out there and do what they were supposed to be. And I'll tell you what, if Penske and other drivers were in fact cheating, and you have that many doing it, and you have a whole team doing it, to me, like going back to what you said, Kenny, the gray line, maybe that gray line needs to be more defined, and maybe it not be you know, because let's be honest, what they failed in Tech in Texas, they might get, they might pass this week in Kansas for the very same thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, NASCAR is amazingly inconsistent. I mean, just look at the findings that they shouldn't have fined Hamlin for, and then they didn't fine Keselowski for. I think they realized that they screwed up with the Hamlin thing, so they let Keselowski get away with a lot more and Hamlin ever dreamed of doing and stuff. And, of course, what they're doing, they're going to look at every car for the parts and pieces that they found illegal last week. But one of the old tricks that Smokey Unick used to do is he would give them two or three things to find on purpose and make them feel good so he could probably get away with those two or three things that he didn't want them to catch because they were much more beneficial than the two or three things they caught. And I guarantee that mindset is in every crew chief and in every car chief and in every racer's head every single time they go through Tech. I'll bet you if you had time to Tech those cars thoroughly, fine-tooth comb those cars, you could probably just pick them apart big time and find all sorts of illegal stuff on them.
Kenny, how much is this effect going to have on drivers like BK, who obviously wants a repeat championship? How big of an effect? It, at the end of the day, especially when you're on the bubble of getting in the chase and not getting in the chase, and some of these drivers that got penalized this week not to get in the chase because of that penalty, how big of a are we going to see that happen? I guess that's the question. Is that going to happen?
Sure. Sure, it'll bother them a little bit, but they'll just buckle down and figure out another way to do it. I mean, the cat and mouse game between tech inspectors and racers have been there since the first Orange Creek got wheels on it and two kids were pushing down the street. I mean, it's always been that way, and it's always going to be that way. I mean, we do it constantly at every level of every racing. I mean, I can tell you stories about how we as such 16, 17-year-old punk kids figured out how to get around tech for spring rates and stuff on the old street stock divisions that we used to race and stuff when we were kids. And it happens at the earliest time that you get into a racing organization, there's actually a tech inspector all the way up to the top of the heap. They'll just think about something else and figure out another way to get a little bit better. That's what they get paid the big bucks to do. I mean, if crew chief can afford a $100,000 fine, they're making plenty of money. I'm sure the teams pay the fines for them and stuff, but that's what they're paid to do. They're paid to find speed secrets. They're paid to find things that somebody else don't have. They're paid to find those little gray areas that they can get through the tech inspectors and make that car go a little bit faster. So they'll just hit the reset button and go to work on something else. And they probably got three or four things already in the fire.
Right, absolutely. Well, Kenny, we're joined by Kenny Barr of Radio Speed Talk. Now, Kenny, this normally is a day that I look forward to just joke around on the air with. This isn't really a joking day because we've dedicated our host show to Boston. But, guys, come on. It is 4:20. We're our sports talk show.
Yo.
Hello, Shorty. What are you doing?
Nothing. Sitting here watching the game, smoking some bud.
Are you all alone?
What's up?
What's up? Who's that?
Yo, pick up the phone.
What's up? What's up?
Yo, Duke, pick up the phone.
Yo.
What's up?
Mr. Kenny Barr, I can never get enough of that. That is my tradition to play that on 4:20 every year. We just happen to be on the show date of it. Now, I'm not condoning the use of recreational marijuana, but come on, they have a day dedicated to the recreational use of marijuana, and there are, you know, this is an honest. I don't smoke recreational marijuana, by the way. I want to put that out there. But I'm just saying, I know a lot of sports fans do. And I'm just saying, there's a lot more arrest out there for petty marijuana use than violent crimes. Anyway, another political show for another time. Mr. Kenny Barr, 4:20, what are your thoughts?
To me, it's just another Saturday, brother. I'm on radio with you. I got some friends that we're going to do a little bit of chat here in an hour or so, and then we're off to Anderson to do a little PA work and some more racing. And if you happen to get loose, bring something extremely warm because I think it's going to be a chilly night in Anderson, Indiana.
Chilly night. Well, guys, well, we got to let you go. I appreciate you taking some time, Kenny, to join us on this very special episode that we've dedicated to the city of Boston, Boston Police Department, FBI, and all the surrounding communities. Kenny Barr, where can people find your work and your masterpieces, sir?
I don't have any masterpieces. My masterpiece is talking to you, Thomas. That's where I do my best work because I finally get a good night's sleep and a nice breakfast, and my wife hooks me up with a Mountain Dew, and I'm ready to go. You can find me on Twitter at KennyBarr52, RadioSpeedTalk.com. I got a good show again this week. You're going to have to tune in and learn about the second installation of board tracks in America and how they used to build racetracks out of wood and where they were and the demise of them back in the 40s. I got a great interview with the president of Anderson Motor Speedway, Rick Dawson. We talked to him on a Wednesday night and had thunderstorm problems down there and rainbow issues that popped up later. So interesting interview with him. Tells us a little bit about the history of that speedway. And we kick around racing like we always do. So you can find us there at Twitter. You can find us at RadioSpeedTalk.com. And you go to the website, you really want to talk to me, you dig hard enough, you can find my phone number, and I might even talk to you. So.
Well, hey, guys, his phone number is area code 260. No. Kenny Barr, Radio Speed Talk. Thanks for joining us on this very special episode of The Balance. Kenny, you have yourself a good week. Hopefully this week is a better week for everybody than last week. We'll talk to you next week, sir.
Thanks, Thomas.
Okay, Tom. Thanks for having me. You have a great weekend yourself.
All righty. Kenny Barr of Radio Speed Talk. So glad that he could join us today on this very special episode that we've dedicated to the city of Boston and the surrounding community. Guys, we'll be right back. Ed Kratz, Calkins Media, and Jeff Kurtz, author of The Slant. We're going to be breaking down draft weekend. Our mock draft continues from last week, guys, right here on the Balance Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Where it began, I can't begin to knowing, but then I know it's growing strong. Wasn't the spring, and spring became the summer. Who'd have believed you'd come along? Touching hands, reaching out, touching me, touching you.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the Fan Revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. IndyProSports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back.
All right, my minions, welcome back to the Balance Radio Network. My name is Tom Marquis, El Presidente. I am your fearless leader and host. This is the second half of our show today, a very special show that we've dedicated to the city of Boston and the Boston Police Department and the entire community of Boston and everyone surrounding it. And, you know, I mentioned this earlier in the first hour. Brad Jones, Michelle Jones' brother, actually lives in Cambridge and was, you know, just talking with us over the weekend and again this morning and texted some pictures. I did invite him on the show, but he had other obligations. He couldn't make it on, and I really wanted to talk with him. But he was talking with us about – what it was like to be under martial law there in Boston. What a crazy, eerie sight. And I tell you what, I was just relieved and I have to admit, I went overboard. I was addicted to it. I was glued to the TV all day long. And I watched every single move and every single – and those of you that are on my Facebook were like, oh, no, can he shut up? But – it's just amazing to me what happened in the course of a week. And my hat's off to the city of Boston. Well, joining us now is Mr. Ed Kratz, who wants to brag about a win from the Philadelphia Phillies against my Cardinals in a rain game. I don't count that as a win. And, Mr. Jeff Kurtz, how you doing, Ed?
What's up?
What's up?
I love that.
And Jeff Kurtz, how you doing, sir?
Good morning, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Fantastic. Guys, I want to talk with you guys individually. I know you guys are both very limited on time, so I do want to get to our subject at hand, and that's the NFL draft and our mock draft. But just, 30 seconds or so, I want to talk to each of you. I want to get your thoughts, your feelings of what happened from the course of Monday over to today. We'll start with you, Ed. What are your thoughts when something like this happens?
Well, you hate to say that you've almost become numb to it because it's becoming more and more, unfortunately, commonplace. Look what happened in Newtown in Connecticut, and and then just a couple months later, what happens in Boston, and it's just terrible. You really have to be alert. You really have to pay attention when you're out in public places and be vigilant. And it's a shame that that's the world we live in, but it is the world we live in, it seems. And thank God for our law enforcement. What a terrific job they did in apprehending these two bombers as quickly as they did. And you think back, it was 18 years ago yesterday when they had the Oklahoma City bombing and Timothy McVeigh, and they had him in custody the very next day. So you don't mess with this country. If you're a terrorist or whoever you are and you want to mess with this country, you better be prepared to die, because that's what we're going to do. We're going to catch you, we're going to find you, and we're going to hunt you down, and justice will be served. And that's a lesson, but it seems that less and less people are learning that lesson, unfortunately, and we just have to remain vigilant and keep our eyes peeled when we're out in public places.
Absolutely, and I couldn't agree with you more on that. Jeff Kurtz joining us today. Jeff, and obviously writer of Bear Claws and author of the book The Slant, the 2013 Draft Guide, and we're going to get into that book here in just a minute. But Jeff, as you watch the events unfold this week, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I kind of echo and piggyback on both of your gentlemen's sentiments. It was the best and the worst of the American spirit. We talk a lot about sports being kind of the toy shop, but you really saw a lot of the phrases that we normally associate with our sports teams: perseverance, determination, resilience. It was riveting television. I just think back to how much the media has really influenced and really been there in terms of the coverage. It was wall to wall. You couldn't take your eye off of it. And I also, I saw something last night, a family literally torn apart, a mother and a daughter who both have had their limbs amputated due to being around the explosion. They were at the finish line waiting for another family member to cross, and they were talking about, we'll get through this. We've got a great family spirit, determination. So all the things that we normally associate with our great athletes and our sports teams really, really come into play. And it was a heartbreaking, tragic episode when it happened, but you had such a sense of pride, relief, just a general outpouring of emotion as you watched the folks yesterday, last night, as the other suspect was apprehended, people chanting into breaking into chants of USA and really applauding the law enforcement as they came down the street. And just the whirlwind of emotions in a week's time. And I really applaud the law enforcement. And, it just brings, in some ways, it's tragic that it happened, but it brings our country closer together, hopefully. And you have a real spirit of kinship with those folks in the Boston area.
Absolutely. And when situations like this happen, there's not Republican, there's not Democrat. I'll tell you what, if there's one city out there, you look at, a lot of blue-collar cities, but there's just one city you don't want to mess with, and that's the city of Boston. And they just went sleepless hours. So my hats go off. And, we've come a long way. And the ability of how they were able to actually locate these guys in a short period of time. One eerie picture, that another picture that was going across social media, I presume that it's real. I saw it on various reputable media outlets. There was a picture of the 8-year-old boy who died in the blast, and just immediately behind him was the suspect they were looking for. And he had his hands watching the race and had his hands on the barrier there, just really excited about the race, paying no attention to what's around him. And the sad thing about it is he shouldn't have to. And so that was just kind of an eerie picture that just moments before the blast there. So, you know, as you know, again, this isn't a political show, but I hope they do whatever means necessary that our military does that we don't want to talk to them about, we don't want to know about, but I hope they get the information of everything that happened to this and do a swift justice to this coward in our federal system. All right, guys, we're going to move forward with the topic at hand, NFL draft. Our mock draft continues. I know Jeff and I started this a little bit last week. I appreciate Ed Kratz of Calkins Media, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles, joining us. Also, Jeff Kurtz, author of The Slant. Jeff, I got the book this week, finally. Because I got on your early – well, I got on your let me paraphrase that. There was no issue in me getting the book. It was just I got on your pre-order list, and so I might even be the first guy to order it. But The Slant, the 2013 NFL Draft Guide, you know, last week I didn't have my book. I think now I have to – after going through – I haven't read this whole book yet, but I think now I have to maybe go in and change some of my mock draft picks. And real quickly, and so that Ed can listen, and maybe if he wants a copy of it, he can pick up a copy. How can people pick up your new book, Jeff Kurtz, The Slant in 2013 NFL Draft Guide?
Sure, I appreciate that, Tom. It was a labor of love and a lot of sleepless nights. Went nearly 300 pages, over 250 full scouting reports, over 900 players profiled. They can go to The Slant Draft Guide, all one word, theslantdraftguide.com. If you order here over the weekend, the books will ship Monday. You will have them in time for the draft. And for those out there who follow the draft or are fantasy football advocates, you can also pick it up and have it. It'll help you with your draft next summer in terms of what rookies might contribute right away. So you get a companion PDF for those of you who like to view it over your computer. You also get a hard copy book delivered via UPS, and we'll have it there in time for the draft. And I think it's a pretty good value. I'm real proud of the work. A lot of time went into it. I will say this, what differs a little bit from other draft guides that are out there, I actually went out and scouted games, okay? You don't see that a lot. A lot of people who put together a draft books are information gatherers. I talked with not only college coaches and pro scouting directors and scouts, but I also went and talked with the athletes. I traveled down to the Senior Bowl in Mobile. I put a lot of film work in as well, watching tapes of games. Each player that's rated in the book that has a full scouting report, I saw three games of those individuals. And when you really think about it, some of them are pretty small school, obscure college players, a little bit off the radar. So it took some time and effort to find tape of those. But I put in the due diligence, and I'm real proud of it. And also it uses an authentic NFL scouting report system. That is to say, there are different ways that teams evaluate their players. And not everybody in the league does this, but probably over 80% use the format that I have inserted into the book in terms of breaking down a prospect by different categories, how they are as an athlete, their competitiveness, how they are as a teammate, their strength, and their overall awareness, their football IQ and instincts. So that all went into it as well. And the last thing I'll say is, but this is a book that has been purchased by some NFL clubs, so I think that validates the work in itself.
Well, and I could agree. I got the book this week, and I love it. I have went through this, and there is one thing about this book, and that's for sure. Jeff, you have done your homework on this, and I would encourage Ed and anybody else that follows the NFL, and especially anybody who wants the inside scoop. This is the must-have book. And I'm not just saying that because he agreed to come on the show. That wasn't kind of a barter system that we worked out. It really is a very good book. All right, Ed Kratz, when's your book coming out?
You know, writing is a lonely endeavor. You know, I congratulate you, Jeff, for putting that together. I can't wait to see the 2014 draft guide now that you came out with this one. I think there's a real market for this type of work. And, you know, that's how Mel Kiper made his bones, right? You know, he became a draft expert. Now he's on ESPN. So
that's right.
You know, I will definitely go online and, you know, order this book. I think it sounds terrific. And, you know, I do follow the NFL and particularly the Eagles, since that's my, you know, I am the beat writer for them. And I'll be curious to see who you have them taking.
We'll get into that right here in just a moment in our mock draft. I think by far, guys, and by the way, Jeff, when you get on ESPN, I still want you to come on The Balance. There's no such thing as non-compete clauses or any, you know, anything like that. You just come on, okay? We'll put you on under an assumed name. We'll call you a source.
I won't big time yet.
All right, guys, let's get into this, because I know you guys both told me that you have very limited time, so I want to, you know, be respectful of that. We talked about last week some of our draft picks, and also, real quickly, going back to the slant, I noticed that you have a mock draft through round three, I believe. Certainly, I'm using that as a reference point here, and I'm going to assume that that's probably going to be your way of going as well, too. But we talked about our first few rounds last week, but I do want to pick up with Ed here, and I want to go all the way down to what you think, all the way down to the Philadelphia Eagles, and we'll pick up on the Lions together. Kansas City Chiefs first round pick. Ed Kratz, who would you be your pick in the first round? A lot of people like Luke Jokel. I got that name wrong again. Offensive tackle, big guy, 6'6", 310 pounds. Is that who the Chiefs go with?
Well, that seems to be the consensus. You know, I'll say Luke Jokel there too. It easily could be Eric Fisher also, the big tackle out of Central Michigan. But, you know, I'll go with Jokel. I'll go with the consensus and make him the number one pick.
Okay, and then round number two, Jacksonville Jaguars. A lot of people like Deion Jordan.
Yeah, you know, Jordan, it could be a pick there. You know, certainly the Jaguars have a lot of needs. I've seen them even taking Geno Smith in some mock drafts. I think that would be a bit of a stretch. I wouldn't be surprised, Tom, if they end up taking Eric Fisher or Luke Jokel, whichever the tackle the Chiefs don't pick. I think the Jags are going to take the other tackle. I'll say Eric Fisher.
Now, last week, I basically went out on a limb here, and I said that I think, based on my conversations with you, which I'm going to change my mind about that, but I thought you guys had your eyes scoped on Eric Fisher.
Well, you know, I'm not sure the Eagles are going to stay at number four. You know, in talking to the general manager of the Eagles this week and Chip Kelly, the coach, this week, the consensus is that this is a draft where there's not a can't-miss prospect. There's nobody in this draft like an Andrew Luck who you can say, yeah, okay, he's going to be a Pro Bowl player for the next 10, 12 years, whatever, or even a Robert Griffin III. You know, there's nobody out there that's a slam dunk. So, you know, my thinking is that the Eagles are building for the next 2 years, and I think they're going to try to want to package that number one pick at four, maybe trade back and get another pick. And I actually think they're going to end up trading with the Miami Dolphins at 11 and moving back. The Dolphins have a ton of picks early. They have two in the second round and two in the third round. They might be able to get a third rounder to move back to number 11. The Dolphins crave a tackle. I know they've been talking about signing or trading for Brandon Albert for the Chiefs or signing Eric Winston, who's still a free agent. If that doesn't happen, I think they're going to trade back with the Dolphins to 11 and try to pick up another pick later in the draft. You know, maybe even next year to get a higher pick. Because this under Chip Kelly is a 2-year process to rebuild this team, and, you know, they need players. And since there isn't a can't-miss guy there at four, I think they're going to try to trade back. I'm not saying they will, but they are absolutely going to try and trade back
And if the Dolphins don't fit, then maybe the Chargers at 12, because they're also looking for an offensive back. So, you know, that's kind of how I see it. I see the Eagles kind of trading out of that spot at this point.
Right, and San Diego's got the 11 pick, and Miami has the 12 pick. So I think everybody agrees that Oakland will go away with Sheriff Floyd. At least I think I'm in agreement with that. And I was just looking at Jeff's pick on that. You have the same guy there on your mock pick.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have any disagreement on that, Ed, as far as on your pick for Oakland on the number three pick, Sheriff Floyd?
No, I don't. I think that, you know, that seems to be the consensus. I'd say maybe another guy to look out for, again, is Geno Smith. You know, he's kind of seems to be the wild card in this whole thing is, you know, where do the quarterbacks fit into this draft? You know, it's like the old saying, you know, at the risk of offending anybody, you know, she's a 2 at 10 and a 10 at 2. You know what I mean? Like at 10 o'clock, you're in a bar and there's someone that might not be very attractive and they're a 2, but at 2 o'clock in the bar, all of a sudden that person becomes a 10. So the closer you get to the draft, the greater the love affair becomes with quarterbacks, and teams all of a sudden begin to think, well, geez, you know what? They start to overlook maybe some of the flaws that quarterback has because they know they need a quarterback. So, you know, the Raiders could be in play for Geno Smith. I don't think it'll happen, but I'm just saying that could be an option that, you know, they could take that option. We'll see.
Well, we'll see who has
to jump in there on that echo what Ed said. I think that's a very true statement. The quarterbacks are a true wild card. I could project Geno Smith. A lot of people think he's a top 10 pick. There's several teams, Arizona, Philadelphia, Buffalo in the top 10 that could be looking at that position. But if they go a different direction or if a trade is somehow involved, those guys could fall to the latter part of the first round or even spill over into the second round. So this is one of the more unpredictable drafts in recent years, and I think it makes it intriguing for fans of both college and pro football because there are a lot of guys that where there's not true star power, there are a lot of guys that are very good football players that could end up in a lot of different directions, and one pick could trigger a trade or could trigger a run on a certain position. So I think that's going to be very fascinating to watch.
Well, like I said, we'll see who has their beer goggles on. You know, a lot of people might disagree with me, but one of the foremost experts on drafts, and not just because he drafted Peyton Manning, but just because what he did with the Bills, what he did with the Colts, is Bill Polian. And one of the things he used to say is, you know, step away from the board a little bit and look at the guys that isn't getting all the hype and look at their tape. Nobody's looking at their tapes. And he, to me, I think he, a lot of people might disagree with some of his picks, but one pick he got a lot of heat over was that Ryan Leaf Peyton Manning pick, a lot of heat. And well, it turned out that he was the right one on that. And certainly he has got a history of making great picks, not just for the Indianapolis Colts, but also for the Buffalo Bills. He is an expert at the draft, and he often says that you got to step back and look at what other people aren't looking at. So what you're saying, guys, very much could come into play. All right, let's pick up on all of us together here on the fifth round with the Detroit Lions. Now, my pick here, and it might be a little bit different than yours, Jeff, in fact, I know it is I like D. Milner, cornerback, 6'1", 182 pounds. I think this guy's a good fit for the Detroit Lions. Jeff, what are your thoughts on that?
I wouldn't argue that pick. I actually have him going on the following selection to Cleveland. But I think that right around that area, the Lions need help defensively. I was thinking more Ziggy Ansah, the defensive end from BYU, simply because they lost Cliff Averill, their defensive end, in free agency, but they need help on the back end as well. So Milner is probably under consideration for that pick. I know they have some discussion as well as possibly trading down. The thing is, there's a lot of talk about that always, and then once it comes to draft night, you see a reluctance for teams to really go up. I think we'll see more activity and volatility as far as trades go from picks 15 down through the end of the first round. And I think from that point, it could just blow wide open and get really crazy. But Milliner is a consideration for six. In my book, I project Ziggy Ansah, but that's like in vanilla or strawberry ice cream.
good analogy. All right, yeah. Ed, number five pick, Detroit Lions.
Well, you know, listen, if the Eagles don't trade down and, you know, they're unable to do that and they remain at four, I think that they're probably going to go defense. You know, I know they like Lane Johnson, but I think, you know, maybe Lane Johnson, that big tackle from Oklahoma, I think I know the agent put it out there that the Eagles are very interested. I know the Eagles really like him. He reminded them a lot of Jason Peters, who's returning from the two Achilles tears this from last year. They cost him the whole season. I know they like him. I'm not sure they would take him because I think there's some depth on the line. I think the Eagles might go defense at four if they stay there, and I'm not sure Deion Jordan or Dee Milliner could be the pick for the Eagles at four, which if they pick, say they pick Milliner, then I think maybe Jordan goes five to the Lions and Milliner goes six to the Browns. But that's kind of how I would see it, that the Eagles may go Milliner. They're really light in cornerbacks. If they stay at four, they may go Dee Milliner, which would leave Deion Jordan still on the board. You know, and he's a guy that everybody projects. Maybe he's the next Lawrence Taylor, you know, in a couple of years down the road. He needs to gain weight, needs to get stronger. But, you know, he's a kid that if you project him out, you know, 2-3 years down the line, that kid could be as dominating as any defender in the league. So I would put the Lions with Jordan and Milliner going to the Browns at six.
Well, I tell you what, you were mentioning Lane Johnson a couple times. That's exactly who I had, Lane Brown, offensive tackle from out in Oklahoma. Now, I know a lot of people think Oklahoma had a weak defense, if you will, but I think quite possibly Lane Johnson was probably the most improved player in Oklahoma in 2012. Obviously a former quarterback, tight end, defensive end. There's really nothing he can't do on the offensive line, and the Browns need some help. And I think Lane Johnson can really come in there and make an immediate impact. So my pick for the Cleveland Browns would be Lane Johnson in that pick, in the number six pick with the Cleveland Browns. Jeff, what are your thoughts?
Well, I have him projected for Dee Milliner, but I do like Lane Johnson. I have him right outside the top 10. He could be he's a borderline top 10 pick and a guy who has really improved. He helped himself a lot at the Senior Bowl in Mobile. And I thought the curious thing, he's a great athlete, real good feet, which is what you want in a left tackle, long arms so that he can gain leverage against pass protectors, moves his feet well. They asked him how he went from being a junior college quarterback to now being an offensive lineman and projected as a borderline top 10 pick. And his answer was, I stocked up at the buffet line. And I thought that that was a very true statement. He's added a lot of girth, and he's a fast-rising player who has a very high ceiling in scouting terms, which means he can get a lot better. He's only scratched the surface of his potential. And I think that Johnson, Eric Fisher, and Luke Jokel are your three prototypical left tackles that teams would love to have in this draft if they're picking in that top 10 region.
Ed, Cleveland Browns, pick number six.
Yeah, I think they go who did I say earlier there? It was, I think they'll end up going with I could see them going with Lane Johnson. You know, they need help in the secondary, and if Dee Milliner's there, they'll go with Dee Milliner. I'll say Milliner.
All right, we move on to the number seven pick. And real quickly, Jeff, I want to give you your out. We're past your time limit here, so if you got to go, we understand. If you want to stay around, you're more than welcome. So just if I see you go away, I know what happened, okay?
Okay, I'll try to hang for a couple more minutes.
All right, the number seven pick, Arizona Cardinals. We'll start with you, Jeff, so we can go ahead and get your thoughts on that pick because I know you're limited on time. So go ahead, Jeff.
Well, I think they have a quarterback need. I would be surprised if they don't pull the trigger early. I'm projecting Matt Barkley from USC, and I know that opinions are mixed on him based upon his senior year, but he actually had a pretty good 2012, and so he got hurt late in the year. The whole USC team had kind of a subpar season, but if you go back and look at his body of work over his career, he's played in a lot of big games, He has a strong enough arm to make all the throws. He's a very smart, heady player who usually makes good decisions. He struggled a little bit last season down the stretch with making some poor throws. I think it was to compensate for the team was struggling. He wasn't fully healthy. But I think he's a winner, and he has all those intangibles, the it factor. If he's surrounded by a good supporting cast, and he'll have that in Arizona with Larry Fitzgerald, Michael Floyd is wide receivers. They have some work to do on their offensive line. But I think that Matt Barkley is a guy that the Cardinals and Bruce Arians have their eye on. And I would be somewhat surprised if they bypass the opportunity to select him.
Well, guys, we're 5 days, 9 hours, 25 minutes, 27 seconds till the 2013 draft gets underway. Gives you goosebumps, doesn't it, Ed? There is no offseason.
Yeah.
I'm going to go against the grain on this. I know that Arizona needs a quarterback. Are they going to go with Barkley from USC? He wasn't even on my radar for Arizona. I tell you who was, though, Jonathan Cooper. I don't know. I think he did a great job as an offensive guard. And let's look at it like this. Arizona needs somebody up there that can step in and really know how to play that position. Jonathan Cooper, 6'3", 310 pounds, would be my pick for the Arizona Cardinals in the number 7 pick. And that might be against the grain. I understand that. But I think that might be a key position they need to fill, Ed.
Yeah, I agree. They need help on the offensive line. But you know what? Bruce Arians is a quarterback maker. He's used to developing quarterbacks. So, you know, I think they're going to take a quarterback. Matt Barkley could be the guy. You're not hearing a lot about him, as far as going that high. Everybody seems to think it's going to be Geno Smith that goes that high. But, you know, I like the way Jeff's thinking there. I think it could be Matt Barkley. I'll go with a quarterback, and I'll just say Geno Smith because that seems to be the one everybody's talking about.
Did you have anything to add to that, Jeff?
No, I think that Barkley is a guy that, again, opinions are mixed. Some folks don't think he would go that high. I just think they've spent a lot of time with him quietly leading up to this process. I think they like his overall makeup. I think it would be a good fit, and I'm looking for players that are good fits and systems. I actually have, just kind of peeking ahead, I have Geno Smith going next to Buffalo. I think they're going to take a quarterback early, whether it's first round or second round. Their coach came from Syracuse, Doug Marrone. Ryan Nassib is a guy that a lot of teams like. His former coach there is now at Buffalo, so he could be a consideration for them. Nassib in round 2 early, but I have Geno Smith projected next to Buffalo. I think, again, the quarterbacks are going to kind of be the key to that first round. If they go early, then maybe the draft kind of holds to form. If they don't, or if there are trades up into the top 10, that could really throw the whole thing out of whack, and guys could be available very late. Teams could be faced with some decisions to make.
Well, Jeff, I know you said you got to go, but I did want to get your thoughts on the 24 pick with the Indianapolis Colts and your pick for the Chicago Bears, and then we'll let you go.
Sure. At number 20, I'm projecting the Bears to take Alec Ogletree, outside linebacker from Georgia. I think that they have a definite need. They lost not only Brian Urlacher this offseason, but also Nick Roach. So they signed a couple veterans in DJ Williams and James Anderson, the veteran from Carolina. But they don't have any young depth at the linebacker position. So, ideally, the Bears want to trade, but you have to have a trading partner, somebody who wants to come up and get that pick. So, at 20, if they keep it, Alec Ogletree, he's a very athletic, instinctive, rangy, sideline-to-sideline playmaker. He does have a couple character issues and flaws, was arrested a week before the scouting combine for a DUI. He also allegedly failed a drug test down at Georgia. So, a couple black marks against him, but that's who I have the Bears picking if they stay at that selection. They could also use some help offensive line. I think that they've done some things in free agency to kind of shore that up. They'll probably look for that in depth down the road in the draft. As far as Indianapolis at number 24, I'm projecting Jonathan Hankins, the defensive tackle from Ohio State. He would be an excellent addition to the front line. Productive, experienced, durable, has played in a lot of big games, a very solid pick to really shore up that interior of the Colts defensive line. I think they could go a couple different directions. I would not be stunned if there's a wide receiver on the board that they like a if somebody like a Tavon Austin, wide receiver from West Virginia, slides down, is available at that pick. Some people like Cal wide receiver Keenan Allen. I heard Bill Pullian refer to him as a Reggie Wayne clone. He's a tall, rangy wide receiver, good hands, plucks the ball with his hands instead of letting it come into his body, good route runner. Speed is an issue with him a little bit, and he's also been nicked up some. So I can see them going a couple different directions, but Hankins is my pick there at number 24 for the Colts.
Jeff Kurtz joining us today. I know you got to go, buddy. Author of the Slant 2013 NFL Draft Guide and writer for Bear Claws. Real quickly, Jeff, where can people find your work, your masterpieces, and pick up a copy of your book again?
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, guys. Go to www.theslantdraftguide.com. If you order this weekend, we'll ship the book out along with your companion PDF on Monday. You'll have it in time for the draft. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter, BearsClawsFootball.com, and on Facebook at The Slant Draft Guide and Bears Claws as well. I appreciate it. Had fun talking draft with you guys this morning.
All right. Jeff Kurtz. Hey, Jeff. Jeff Kurtz, author of The Slant 2013 NFL Draft Guide, and obviously a foremost expert on the Chicago Bears. Well, there remains two, myself and Mr. Ed Kratz, to make the expert decision in the balanced mock draft. And I know you've got something going on with one of your kids, but for some reason, why did I think your daughter had a wrestling match? That's probably your son.
Yeah, no, my daughter is not allowed to wrestle, not at all.
Let's hope not.
10 years old. No.
If you need to jump off, you just say I got to go. Do you want to stay around or you got to go?
Because no,
I don't
want to. I can stick around for sure.
I know what it's like. I'm sorry.
No, this whole softball thing is new. You know, I have the older son who does football and wrestling, and now, you know, she's 10 and she's trying the softball
right.
thing. And, I don't know how it's all going to work out, but I don't want to miss it. I'm kind of excited to see her play. She had a couple hits the other night, little dribblers down the line that she was able to leg out. So, it's hard.
I totally understand. I have one son, and he is now grown and in the Marines, but I do have a precious granddaughter who is just spoiled rotten. Probably part of my doings too. So I understand. And she's two. She is hitting a bat and ball, but she's not in any organized sports. But word has it is she's a Colts fan and a Cardinals fan. At least that's the gear she wears all the time. I'm not sure where she's getting that from. But anyway,
boy, I wonder where. Huh?
Exactly. All right. We get back on target. We were talking about Geno Smith on the number 8 pick. I mean, Geno Smith in the number 7 pick, I think, with Arizona Cardinals. I'm sorry. I actually had and guys, what I will do, because Jeff had to go, we'll go ahead and just throw in his pick here. Again, I'm referring to his book here. I had the Buffalo Bills picking Geno Smith, a quarterback. I think the Bills need so much help, but they got to start with a leader, and Geno Smith is a good leader. Quarterback, 6'3", 214 pounds. I honestly think that Geno Smith can make an impact. And one of the things I look at, especially in first rounds, Ed, is can they make an immediate impact? Because that's why you would draft a first round draft. If you don't want them to make an immediate impact, you can have them do it in round two or round three or what have you. So Geno Smith, Buffalo Bills. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, especially in the top 10, you want a guy to come in and, you know, you can plug him right into the field day one. But, yeah, I agree, quarterback for sure. I think I have Geno going 7, to the Cardinals. So I'm going with Ryan Nassib here. Just because Doug Marrone, the head coach of the Bills now, is his former coach at Syracuse. Doug Marrone brought his offensive coordinator from Syracuse. Ryan Nassib flourished in that system under those two guys at Syracuse. So I just think that they're probably going to pick him because he's a guy you can plug in right away
day one because he's already familiar with what they're doing up there. So I'm going to go Ryan Nassib.
Well, and Jeff Kurtz had Geno Smith as well, the number 8 pick. Going to number 9 pick, the New York Jets. You're kind of familiar with a little bit of what goes on with the Jets. At least it's kind of in your neck of the woods. I like this guy's defensive end, Ezekiel Ashaw. And I'm probably saying his name wrong. I do well with Smith and Jones and those type of names. Ezekiel Ashaw.
Yeah, I think you're talking about Ziggy. I think he goes by the more common
spelling.
We'll just call
it Ziggy. Okay, yeah, right.
Ziggy. Ziggy Ansah, I believe is how you say that. You know, it's funny because he's a guy that's very athletic. Chip Kelly pointed him out as a guy that, you know, everybody projected him to be in the NBA after a great college career because he was a very good basketball player. So he's athletic. And the Jets have needs on that side. I think they have a need at wide receiver also. I think I'm going to go with, I guess, who's perceived to be the best receiver in this class. That's the Cordarrelle Patterson kid out of Tennessee, I believe. That's what I'm going to have to take. I'm going to have to take a wide receiver there, Patterson.
Well, we move on down the road here to the Tennessee Titans. And, the Tennessee Titans could draft anybody right now. They could come in and make an immediate impact. But in the first round, number 10 pick, I look at the Tennessee Titans picking up Chance Warmack, a guard, from Alabama, Crimson Tide. I think, you know, he started all 12 games this past season and 25 straight contests, you know, had honorable mention and Pro Football Weekly, all SEC team, I believe, and he's just really liked a lot. And he did some damage to Penn State, but that's neither here nor there. So
I agree. I mean, and Mike Munchak's a line guy. You know, the head coach of the Titans. You know, he's an former offensive lineman. So I can see them picking a guy. Now, you had Jonathan Cooper going earlier, I think, but I can see them taking, you know, you have them taking Warmack. I'll go John Cooper out of North Carolina as being the pick for the Titans there.
And Jeff has the same guy I do. And this isn't by design. I'm literally looking at his picks in his book as I'm looking at my list. So I'm not changing anything. Going to the number 11.
I wish I would have bought his draft guide this week, so I'd have it in front of me.
I should have thought.
I think it's a great thing. I'm gonna buy that book. I think you know, any fan out there should really pick that up. It sounds like Jeff's done a great job, done a lot of homework.
Oh yeah, I'll have Michelle email you the link on that. There's a link you go to, you can just order it. It's real easy. Number 11 pick, we talked about these guys a while ago, the San Diego Chargers. Also joining us is Super Colts fan Sparky. He is all about the draft, coming down here to the draft party this weekend. We'll be down there with the balance at the draft party, and myself and Axel and all of our fantasy football huddle team will be down at the Colts Grill in Indianapolis, downtown Indianapolis. And Ed, you're more than welcome to catch a flight. They've got a big party going on there, and all the Colts players and people will be there. And, you know, it's as close to a war room that you can get to. Sparky, how you doing?
Let me ask you this. Is there anything you guys don't have a party for? It seems like every time I'm on the air, there's a party going on for some event.
That's what we do, especially football season, because, you know, we have to attach the word party to people with it so that, you know, hey, I don't know, but the Colts put it on every year. It's a big thing they got every year. So, you know, they've got a restaurant that's named after him. I don't think Jim Irsay is one of the owners, but that's neither here nor there. Sparky, Super Colts fan, how are we doing, sir?
What is going on? How you doing?
What is going down, sir? You've been in hibernation. I understand that. You tell me you got a new suit. Is this the first time we've had Sparky on since the end of the Colts season last year? And Sparky is all about the Colts, and really that's it. But we just bring him in, you know, for some comic relief or what have you. So we're going to go ahead and ask your thoughts there, Sparky. San Diego Chargers, number 11 pick.
Xavier Rhodes is who I've got. Who do you think the Chargers should pick as the number 11 pick? You can't say Andrew Luck.
Really? That's my only pick, because I don't know anybody in college. You know this. I don't know why you bring me on this show, you know, for the draft, because I don't know anybody.
I brought you on today to talk about the pick down.
You know what? I will tell you this. I will tell you this. Give everybody out there a little piece of advice. If you're running from the cops and you go hide in the boat, make sure the boat's in water, not in the town called Watertown, idiot.
Well, I don't think these guys, you know, I don't know. Again, you think that they're smart enough, and I don't want to give these guys credit for intelligence because that's not what I'm trying to do here. But you think they're smart enough to build a bomb and to be a part of this, as evil as it is, to be a part of a well-orchestrated terror attack. But they're too stupid to get out. They were within walking distance of the entire
– He was partying 2 days after the attack. He went back to, what is it, Dartmouth College? He went back to his college after the attack and was walking around.
Unreal. Unreal. So we digress. But, Sparky, do you have a pick for San Diego? Just throw anybody out there. Anybody at all.
I don't know anybody. And that's honestly, God's truth, I do not know anybody in college. I just don't pay attention to it. I have 5 businesses. I barely have time to keep up with the Colts. If it ain't Colts related, I don't care.
Here's the thing. They're no longer in college once they get to the draft.
Well, then I'll learn about them when they come into the NFL, because right now I really couldn't care less.
But you are going to be down here for the big draft party, right? Thursday?
Yeah, we're gonna be down there on Thursday.
Now you have a whole posse of people that follow you around. We'll get to that here in just a moment, but I want to get through some of these picks. So you could just say pass, Sparky, and we'll just go on to the next one. San Diego Chargers, Xavier Rhodes, cornerback, 6'2", 209 pounds. I think is a good for the Chargers, Ed.
I like the offensive lineman. I don't have Lane Johnson going off my board yet. You know, I think they're going to – if they don't trade with the Eagles, and even if they do trade with the Eagles, this might be a good spot for Lane Johnson to go, in my opinion.
Well, and that's actually who Jeff has going as well, as Lane Johnson to the San Diego Chargers. Now the number 12 pick, who you talked about, the Philadelphia Eagles trying to trade down for. So we look at who I had, providing that there's not a trade. Now this could change a lot of mixtures and point that out if there is a trade. But so we're just going to go on the assumption right now that we live in a perfect world. There will be no trades, but there will be. So we're just going to go on the assumption that Miami still has the 12th pick. I think they go with I can't pronounce his last name. I'm just going to call him a star. Star Latui, did I say that, out of Utah, 6'3", 228 pounds, good power in his lower body, and can be very destructive. He's very, very quick and very, very strong. I think that he could definitely make an impact with the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, he had the heart condition. He was unable to perform at the combine because it was, he had this heart condition, but he has since been medically cleared. He is going to be a force. They've compared him to the Baltimore Ravens tackle, whose name escapes me, the real big guy from the Ravens. He plays defensive tackle, Haloti Ngata. He's been compared to Haloti Ngata, Star Lotulelei has. And I can see him going there, but again, I think the Dolphins need a tackle. You know, they lost Jake Long in free agency, and I just think that they're probably going to go with the next tackle that's rated at that spot, and I think they're going to go with DJ Fluker out of Alabama.
Well, so we move on down to the next draft pick with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tavon Austin is my pick. Wide receiver, 5'9", 175 pounds. This guy is fast. And I tell you what, trying to catch Tavon Austin, in my opinion, is like catching a rabbit in a cornfield. We say things like that in Indiana. Just so you know, Ed, I don't know if that means anything to you, but that just means that he's really fast. If you ever try to catch a rabbit in a cornfield, I'm going to tell you what, you'll know what I mean, especially when you try to get a hold of their legs and they bring some damage. So Tavon Austin, Tampa Bay Bucks, in the 13th round.
Yeah, I think that they're going to go, depending on if they're able to trade for Darrell Revis from the Jets. I know there's been a lot of talk about them trying to get Revis from the Jets. And, you know, if they're unable to do that, I'm going to give them a cornerback. I'll give them Xavier Rhodes.
Okay, moving on. I want to try to get through these. We've only got a few more minutes left here. Number 14, Carolina Panthers. Sheldon Richardson, defensive tackle. Carolina needs to do something on their defensive end. And I think this is a big guy, 6'4", 295 pounds, defensive tackle. I think he's a good pick for the Carolina Panthers, number 14 pick.
I agree, defensive tackle, but I still have Starlotolelu. On my board, the kid from Utah, and I'll go with him there at that spot.
Okay. Now, number 15 pick. I wanted to give – that's where I lost it. Carolina, Sheldon Richardson, he did too. Jeff got that in the slant guide there. 15 pick, the Saints. Who dat? And I can't, I'm not going to even try to pronounce this guy's name. Barkvius Mingo, defensive end. 6'5", 243 pounds. He's from LSU Tigers. A quick first step and a good effort. I think he's got a great frame, and I think it's easy to see a prospect that has yet to scratch the surface of his ability. And if you want to look at sleepers that can make an impact on your team, like I was talking about with Bill Polian, Mingo would be one of those guys.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on Mingo going to the Saints. He's a kid that – he's like Deion Jordan. You know, he needs to gain some weight. His frame's a little light, but he's got the – you know, he's long. He's 6'5", 6'6", very athletic. There's been some question about, you know, his interest level in becoming the player that everyone seems to think he can become. But, you know, I'll go with Mingo. I think it's certainly a kid that 2-3 years down the road can, again, be one of the more dominant players in the NFL.
Well, and you know, we've only got just a couple more minutes left here. So, obviously, we know the Colts got the 24 pick. And, you know, we scroll all the way down to the Baltimore Ravens. I think that's actually where Mayo Teo actually ends up at from Notre Dame. I think his stock got hurt. I think he's still going to be picked up in the first round. So, I guess just kind of wrap up the first round here for us, Ed. Who you think might go where? Feel free to go in any particular order or any thoughts that you have on the first round. We're just, unfortunately, with all of our Boston talk and stuff, we've ran out of time as well.
Yeah, well, you know, with the Colts, you know, with Sparky, the Colts fan there, I don't know who he would like to see the Colts get, but I think Indianapolis could go for a wide receiver here, and I think they may end up going with Robert Woods out of USC. You know, 6 foot, 6'1", 205-pound receiver, big body. You know, start putting some weapons around Andrew Luck you know, see where that takes you. The Colts had a great run this year. Give them another weapon, and they could have a greater run in them. So I go with Robert Woods as the Colts pick there.
Well, I tell you, we've been hearing all kinds of things about this marquee wide receiver coming via Jim Irsay's tweets, but I honestly think we go with a defensive end. I mean, we look at Grissom coming from the Eagles, and you know well what he's about, and he's all defense, and defenses win championships, so we need help. So Dante Jones, defensive end, is who I got. Jeff, as he mentioned a while ago, has got Jonathan Hawkins, defensive tackle, Ohio State. I think we go with a defensive player. Sparky, now come on, this is the Colts. This is your time to shine.
I like to see somebody else on the offensive line or defensive line. I mean, I have to agree with you there, but I mean, I think offensive line too. I mean, Luck, you know, going down a lot last year, but either one of the two would be good. And as far as the receivers go, I think we're fine with the receivers. If Hayward Bay can, you know, reestablish himself and prove that, you know, hey, he belongs in this league, then maybe he'll get a multi-year deal or something. But, you know, I think T.Y. Hilton and LeVon Brazil both are solid. And, you know, they're young. You just got to give them more time.
So So Sparky, you want someone either on the offensive line or the defensive line, and you think we need either one of them. So,
yeah.
All right, guys.
I think offensive line more than the other.
We have got to go. It's time for the jungle. Guys, each get about 30 seconds to rant about whatever you want to rant about. You can rant about Boston. You can rant about the win that Philadelphia got over the Cardinals in the rain that I don't count as a win. You can rant about anything. Go ahead. You got 30 seconds, Mr. Ed Kratz. Go.
Well, listen, I got a rant on that. Look, it was a 7-inning game. The Cardinals were getting whipped 8-2. Tom, I'm sorry. I don't think they were going to come back. Now, I know the Phillies bullpen has been shaky. They have two more games left here in Philadelphia. I think I told you that the Phillies were going to win 3 out of 4. They have Cliff Lee going tonight. I don't see a lot of offense coming from the Cards. They're going to win tonight, and then tomorrow it's going to be Kyle Kendrick, and he pitched well his last outing. So, listen, rain or not, Tom, the Phillies won fair and square, 7 innings. It only has to go 5. So, please, let's put it in the win column and move on.
Absolutely. Ed Kratz, where can people find your work and your masterpieces at?
Yeah, thanks, Tom. You can follow me on Twitter. It's KRACZE. That's my Twitter. Or you can find my work on the Eagles. It's Philly, www.phillyverbs.com. And you can put a / Eagles, and it'll take you right to my work. So thanks a lot for the opportunity, Tom. I appreciate
it. Sure, absolutely. Ed Kratz, Caucus Media, beat writer for the Philadelphia Eagles. All right, Sparky, go.
Hey, did anyone hear about the tornado today? A touchdown over there.
I apologize.
Did you get that?
Bugger.
Oh, come
go
on.
Ahead. Go ahead. I'll give it to you. Go ahead.
Hey, did anyone hear about the tornadoes the other day in Chicago? They told everyone to head over to Soldier Field because there's never a touchdown over there. Come see us at Colts Grill next Thursday. Food
all right.
And Antoine Bate and Donald Brown will be there.
All right. Sparky! The best Super Colts fan. We'll see you Thursday at the Colts Grill, buddy.
All right.
All right, guys, that's going to do it for us. I got a real quick rant. Guys, this week was a terrible week in our nation in a lot of ways. A lot of things happened, from the Texas explosion to the Boston Marathon bombing. What I can tell you is, in the Boston Marathon bombing, those cowards did not take our freedoms away. We are still going to be able to talk about sports. We are still going to be able to unite as America, as Americans. Boston is a strong city. We salute you, Boston, and I want to just take my hats off to you. There is no rant. What I am going to say in the jungle today, Boston, is that we salute you. We love you, and I am proud to consider Boston an adopted city of mine, guys. We're going to go. I've played portions of this song, and we're going to end the show here with Sweet Caroline from, obviously, the Boston Red Sox.
Where it began, I can't begin to know it, but then I know it's growing strong. Wasn't the spring, and spring became the summer. Who'd have believed you'd come along? Touching hands, reaching out, touching me, touching you. Don't seem so lonely. We fill it up with only two. And when I hurt, curtain runs off my shoulders. How can I hurt when holding you? Warm, touching warm, reaching out, touching me.